Well, good day. I am so pleased to have so many of you with us here today. Welcome to this session on Tech Tips for Fun and Time Savings. I'm Randy Johnston out of Hutchinson, Kansas, and we welcome you here for our course today. We're going to talk about five time-saving products or more, actually, and we're going to talk about techniques to save time. We'd like for you to really walk away with two or three or four things that are actionable for you, and I also want to just expose some of the things that are in tools that you probably already own along the way. So again, I am Randy Johnston out of Hutchinson, Kansas, and I've been around the technology profession for 40 plus years, teaching CPE for around that same amount of time. Been on the top 25 thought leader list since 2011. In fact, we have the top thought leader event for this year coming up soon. Been on the top 100 list since 2004 and have been nominated again for the current year. Inducted in the Accounting Hall of Fame in 2011. I write columns every month for the CPA Practice Advisor, and I am the author of at least six college level books. So you are welcome to reach out to me. We'll do what we can to be responsive to you on that. Now, that said, today's podcast, you are able to get for free. It's we also produce weekly podcasts and as well as multiple podcasts on some weeks. We're trying to do reviews and analysis and training on topics from mobile apps to Excel tutorials. We're focusing on topics which need more attention, and usually the detail that we can provide in a podcast or a webcast is far more focused than what we can do in maybe an all-day webinar or conference session. You can watch or listen to us for free on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, and many more. And you get to watch or listen live like today on Tuesdays or Fridays at 11. We're also streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. You can earn credits for today's webinar if you'd like to. It's super simple. You just take a short five-question quiz. The certification will come to you from our business of K2 Enterprises. We also have we also have free copies of learning materials. You have the ability to ask questions today. I'll try to handle them the best I can. And again, to get your CPE for today, just visit the short URL that you see on the screen. Now, beyond that, just a few disclaimers. Everything that's product name, logo, and brands are owned by the respective companies, and all of the company product and service names used in this website are for identification purposes only. And use of the names doesn't imply an endorsement. The material we're presenting is for educational use only. I will make very specific recommendations, but we still recommend that you do your own due diligence before making any investment decision. And the images used and artwork are courtesy of Flat Icon, Unsplash, and others. Well, the major topics today, pretty straightforward. Apps to save time, digital plumbing, RPA, and pre-accounting. We're going to talk a little bit about mobile watch and tablets. We'll do some video, sound, and camera. We're going to talk about productivity and collaboration features and how those enable our work from anywhere. Plus, there's tips, just easier ways to do things on the tools that you own. So let's start with the apps to save time. And I think in this particular case, you will discover if I can. I'm going to just minimize that. And first, I want to start with just Calendly. Now, Calendly is a software product that allows you to schedule multiple different people in any media that you like. So you can use Zoom or Teams or schedule a call and so forth. Calendly shows your availability. You can control when you can meet. You can set different meeting options, and it's available to multiple people. You can use the free version, which is part of the reason we wanted to include it in today's session, or you can use the paid version. So if we flip over here, you can see that I have Calendly running for me, and you can book a time on my calendar that way. It's very straightforward to do. But many of you own Microsoft 365 or Office 365, there's a feature to do that inside Microsoft Office as well, called Bookings. Now, Bookings allows you to set your own service and rates, and you get a custom booking page, just like you saw with Calendly. You can put your business information out there and so forth. So for many of you, instead of buying the separate tool of Calendly, you could use Bookings. There are other products in the marketplace that do this as well. I think the most sophisticated of them is a product called Confirmed, and I bet you I've looked at a dozen of them or so. Calendly is among the most popular, but remember that you've got many, many choices in this particular area. Now, another bundle and another software platform we think is helpful is called TechSmith. They have a bundle of a product called Camtasia and another one called Snagit. These are really good if you're trying to record and create professional looking videos. You can produce or render the content in various formats. You can quickly capture your screen and add context and easily share it. The initial pricing on a bundle like this is about $275. It's got annual maintenance of about $55, but it's very sophisticated. Many of the webinars and podcasts and other things that we've recorded over the past few years have been done this way. We often use Camtasia for short clips that you can put on the websites and so forth. So if you want pretty simple to use, yet it's fairly sophisticated recording capability, Camtasia gets that done. The Snagit screen captures are more sophisticated than what you can get in Windows or Mac and have a little more manipulation to them as well. Now, an additional product that you may want to consider is Grammarly. Now, the Grammarly product actually checks grammar and spelling. There's an add-in, so you can use it with Word and Outlook and more. There is web enablement if you want to turn that on, so you can use it when you're posting to LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook or Gmail. Again, the Grammarly product is free. The individual products up to $12.50. I've noticed over the last 60 days or so, the very first TV ads for Grammarly for Business, that may be a pretty good tool for you. And it is one that I use frequently. I've found that when I'm typing email messages, it's nice to have kind of a proofreader over the shoulder. When I write articles, I always run them through Grammarly. I don't agree necessarily with all the grammar rules, but frankly, I go along with many of them because I realize I'm not really an editor. I'm really a writer. And even though I've done 6 books plus, I'm always amazed at what editors can do with my materials. It's just pretty elegant. But I've also found that it just keeps me from making routine mistakes. So for an example, an article I completed earlier this morning, it was like you heard, and I had missed the R and it had you had. Well, spell was right. H-E-A-D is spelled correctly, but it was the wrong word. And none of the regular Word utilities caught that. None of their review tools and so forth, but Grammarly caught that. And, you know, it just makes for cleaner text. The Grammarly business is really intended to help tech support teams and business communications teams produce better content. I would call out, though, that there are other tools out there. A very popular mini news service called Axios has a product called Axios HQ that also helps groups collaborate to write articles for newsletters and those type of things. So just be aware those type of tools exist. Now, friend and associate Steve Yoss actually taught me about this tool earlier in the year, and I'm going to put this up so you can actually see it here on camera, but you'll notice that I am running to support our broadcast today, the Stream Deck XL. The programmable buttons in here have just been phenomenal. It allows us to start and stop applications easily. It helps you automate routine tasks, and it helps with productivity among different types of products themselves. So I have noticed for myself, for example, that it is pretty common that I'll put my productivity software here. I happen to use the Word buttons, but Excel buttons can be in there, PowerPoint buttons, and so forth. And it allows you to run the products quicker than you can with a mouse. The big version of this, $249. It might be one of my favorite hardware products of this year. A couple of more of my favorite hardware products of the year, though, we're going to talk about yet to come in our time together today. Now, in terms of the complexity of systems getting greater today, it is clear that the connectivity to the cloud is making such a difference. But if you have multiple entities, sometimes the credentials don't get masked or don't get passed properly. Now, I have a good life, but a complex life, because I am fortunate enough to own multiple businesses, and because of that, have multiple credentials for these various businesses. So I have my NMGI operations and my K2 operations and a pharmacogenetics company, RX Genomics, and I won't go on and on, but I've had got at least 5 different credentials in the Microsoft world, at least 3 sets of credentials in the Zoho world, and so forth. And sometimes you want to run an application, for example, Teams or SharePoint, and you want to be able to quickly switch between them. Rambox lets us do that. It's a quick switcher. It has notifications. It's got ad blockers. There's a free version, or you can pay up to $4 a month for it. Now, cryptocurrency and blockchain is very popular in the US market. During the past few weeks, I've read multiple articles about the amount of crypto that's being held. The estimates in the US market right now is 24% of all people have some holding of crypto or non-fungible tokens. Crypto, blockchain, and non-fungible tokens are a topic for another day. But for those of you who are professional accountants, you may have two different things that have to be tracked or issues when it comes to crypto. First, if you're doing audit work for companies and they hold crypto in their ledgers or they have smart contracts, you have to be able to value those in an audit. If you're doing tax, for the last few years, all tax returns have had the crypto question on them. And that question has to be answered even if there are no transactions completed. In other words, if you hold crypto, the right answer on the tax return form is yes. There's only 2 products that we've found that really are effective: this, Luka Tax, and the one that I've included here called Legible. Now, Legible has automated interfaces which support all the major blockchains, all the major exchanges and wallets, and a pretty broad number of accounting platforms. More interfaces are being added to this product every month. We really like what Kalkanti and his team have done at Legible. Now, the Verity folks have a free checklist that you can download for tax purposes. And it really is trying to take you through all the steps of crypto in a tax return. Our guesstimate, which is pretty well founded in fact, is it's going to cost you about 3 to 5 hours to actually trace down the valuations of cryptocurrency if you haven't done it. And if you think about public practice returns, where you've got lots of clients that are doing crypto, that can be a lot of time. The Legible tax calculation is about $50 per user to get that done. I figure it'll save you about 5 hours for that $50. If there's a lot of transactions, they have a slightly sliding scale to go up. But Legible gathers the transaction data from the major cryptocurrencies and exchanges. It has all the data that is needed to calculate the basis and fair value of the transactions in many currencies, and then it generates the reports for these supported currencies, which can be used for gain loss and a report of positions in this. So the crypto connections are pretty straightforward. You basically provide this platform a key, it gathers the information, it can then populate an 8949 directly, or it interfaces with a few various products, or it'll let you put this out in an Excel sheet. Now, we also believe that it is wise to run multi-factor authentication, MFA, in almost all situations. We think the best of the tools here are Cisco Duo, but clearly the Microsoft Authenticator app is another good one to use. We will caution you that the text multi-factor authentication that's attempted to be used. For example, I did that with Google earlier this morning when I was signing in for a meeting. That is actually not as safe. So banks and others that are still using text messages to send you that 5 or 6 digit code, that actually can be compromised and has been compromised by the bad actors. Further, all MFAs were compromised as of November 2020. So I'm a little torn on this because if we were, you know, years in the past, let's say 2015, I'd have made the claim that if you're on MFA, it would prevent the bad actors from getting into your systems. Unfortunately, the bad actors now know how to work around a lot of the MFAs. So there's not as much protection there as used to be. However, some MFA, whether it's an app like Duo or Microsoft Authenticator, is better than no MFA. And likewise, even a text MFA is better than no MFA. So we have applications that can perform multi-factor authentication. We think that's better. Most of the time, these are on mobile phones. It does reduce your risk profile, and it can be used to enable access to single sign-on and a lot of other products. And there's another feature called passwordless, which has begun working and will become more common. I'll talk more about that in just a minute. So when you're using a multi-factor authentication product, an MFA, try to integrate it with as many applications as you can. In some cases, some of the MFAs, like Microsoft's Authenticator, will be available at no charge. The apps are more secure than the text messages. Much of the time, these apps also will do facial recognition on the mobile. And like in the case of Microsoft Authenticator, it's available for free. So I know it's going to be a little hard for you to see, but I basically intentionally pulled my Microsoft Authenticator here. And what's happening is it's doing a Face ID, so you get the ability to see all of the things that I've got Microsoft Authenticator hooked up to. But likewise, I also use the Cisco Duo product. So you can see on Duo, I have multiple different things enabled. So both apps work. And by the way, that's not the only one that I have. I'm also using OneAuth. Now, we don't recommend that you run, you know, 5, 6, 7 different multi-factor authenticators. We really recommend that you pick one and deploy it for your organization. But in my case, because I'm trying to test these things, I also have OneAuth, which is the Zoho multi-factor authentication. There's about a dozen of them out there, but just recognize that, you know, Microsoft Authenticator at free may be one of your better choices. So passwords are really a form of controls, and it's one of your first lines of defense as we see it. And these authentication controls help guard against unauthorized use of computers and tablets and smartphones and other devices. But more importantly, they're used to protect the data and the files on these devices against unauthorized access. So we're really trying to just protect the content. Now, every year there's a list of the worst passwords of the years used. I've got a bunch of them up here in front of you, and you can look at them pretty quickly and realize, yeah, those are pretty bad passwords. And I hope you haven't used any of those, but we know that hackers have a very direct methodology where they try to attack passwords. And the methodologies include guessing, doing dictionary attacks, brute force attacks, using password sniffing software, or doing social engineering. All of those methodologies are used, and all of them can work. So part of the way that we work our way around this, and I'm actually going to just pull my picture down here for just a minute so you can see the QR code if you want to scan that. But basically, there's, again, about a dozen password management tools in the marketplace. There's a variety of them that are good. The good news is most of these are all pretty good, whereas in the early days of password tools, some were good, some were bad. Most of these are all good. PC Week, I believe, did a review on a lot of these products. So they looked at LastPass and Keeper and Dashlane and Bitwarden, and they also looked at LogMe and Once and Password Boss and 1Password and RoboForm, as well as Sticky and McAfee and Zoho and others. And these tools are basically repositories for your passwords. Now, the main ones we like out of that list, by the way, include RoboForm, Zoho Vault, Dashlane, LastPass, and 1Password. We think these five might be the best of the choices in the marketplace. Now, the idea of these vaults is it gives us a place to gather all of the passwords together to have generated passwords created, to securely share passwords if needed, to allow you to share among family members or other business team members, and so forth. You can't go wrong with most of these today. So I think with that being said, which of these would a hacker use in an attempt to compromise your passwords? So for this particular polling question, the answers are social engineering, password sniffing software, brute force attacks, or all of the above. So what do you think is the right call on this? Social engineering, password sniffing software, brute force, or all of the above? And I hope I've given you enough time to consider this. Looks like the polls there will give you a chance to answer that. And I'm just checking to see if you have any questions, and you're absolutely right. I appreciate you taking care of the question about the materials being available. So the correct answer, as I would see it for this particular polling question, is all of the above. All right, before we leave this section, I do want to mention passwordless systems. We think that we are getting near the end of life, if you will, for passwords. And part of the issue here is having greater security. We can do that with multi-factor authentication or passwordless, and greater convenience. And if you think about that, passwords may or may not be convenient, as we would see it. But passwordless technologies are available in a number of areas today. In Windows 10 and 11, the Windows Hello for Business, the Microsoft Authenticator, the ability to use FIDO2 keys, and running in Microsoft Edge are certainly all available. Now, passwordless benefits include that they can improve security, they enable convenience, it's lots easier to scale in large organizations. Passwords are fairly expensive for IT to support, and passwords are hard to remember. By 2022, Gartner predicts that 60% of large and global enterprises and 90% of mid-size enterprises will implement passwordless in about half their cases. So that's a pretty big deal. And as it turns out, passwordless uses FIDO2 keys. FIDO stands for Fast Identity Online. There's about 15 products that I've looked at enough to know who they are, what they do, AuthenTrend and Insurity, and you can see the list in front of you with EWBM and Fission and HID Global and Yubico. And I'm going to pull this one out because the Yubico product, it comes in about 10 or more varieties. I tend to like to use this key, which can go on a key ring. It's a wireless and fingerprint driven authenticity token. I like to use it because it works with the Mac and Windows 10 and 11, and it works with the LastPass repository, which is interesting. But it happens to be developed by a friend of mine, Stina Avrinchard. She's a brilliant lady. And Yubico, YubiKeys, have been purchased by Google. They issue a pair of those keys to every employee because they found that the Yubico keys were less expensive to support than the Google Authenticator. And that's kind of an interesting situation when the creator of the product concedes an alternate method is less expensive. So I'm not saying you should only consider Yubico keys, but it's one that I've used and I know it to be very reliable and so forth. Well, what's the concept here in a passwordless FIDO2 key? Well, the idea is you have a key, a physical key, or some other methodology that you connect with the computer. Windows can detect the FIDO2 security key. It sends an authentication request to Azure. Azure AD comes back with a encryption sequence. The user completes some sort of a gesture, maybe a fingerprint or a facial read or whatever, which then unlocks the private key. The FIDO2 security key signs the nonce with the private key and sends it back. There's a refresh that occurs, and the Azure AD verifies, yeah, this is good. And then Azure AD allows access. Now, I've got a little picture here that shows all this back and forth, but one of the concerns you might have is passwordless more secure than passwords? And the answer is yes, because you've got all this back and forth, but the user doesn't have to really do too much. They just have to get the FIDO2 key either connected or in proximity of the device they want to work on. Right away, the operating systems, Windows, Mac OS, Linux, iOS, Android, all recognize that, passes that credential up for authentication, talks back. You complete some sort of other motion. For most of it, it's facial recognition. Yeah, that's good. So it almost is automatic, that, and you really don't have to type in any user ID and password. It just knows who you are by the FIDO key and the authentication. Now, this has been working for over a year. It is getting easier and easier to use. We think most organizations will adopt passwordless strategies over the next 2 years. I've included links in the materials for you to understand how this might work and to understand how to implement things. Did I ask you to go do it this afternoon or do it the next 60 days or something? No, but I want you to be aware that the days of user IDs and passwords, and I think to a degree, multi-factor authentication, are all coming to a close. So the next app or tech tool that I'd like to talk to you about for a moment, also related to security, is just some of the options for outsourcing employee phishing training and testing. Now, there's a number of these around. I was consulting this week with a group that was using Sophos for their employee phishing and training. I don't have it on the list here, but the number one product in this category happens to be a product called KnowBefore. Now, there is a 25 user limitation or minimum, which I'm not wild about that. And it's about $25 a month. So minimum to play here, $625. But these tools improve your security profile. And we believe that you should have some sort of an employee phishing training testing approach. Don't care which one you use. Cisco Duo has one that's built in, for example. Sophos, as you've already heard, has one. But KnowBefore might be the most common one here. But you've got Cofense and Mimecast and Sans Institute and Ningio and so many more. All of these are pretty good. Like I said with MFA earlier, some phishing testing is better than no phishing testing because it raises awareness so significantly. Well, from here, you might begin to wonder if your security's been compromised. There is a product called, or a site, Have I Been Pwned? And the idea here is it reports when your identities have been compromised in various areas. There's other tools that support this. I thought it was interesting. This week, I was notified of another compromise where my K2 identity had been posted into the dark web. I think that notification was 3 days ago. And these breaches are pretty common. What I'd suggest, that I believe this to be a trustworthy site, that you take your personal and business email addresses, pull up Have I Been Pwned, and see what's been compromised in your email addresses. Most of these have been from major breaches, major theft. So if you think about the Adobe breaches or the LinkedIn breaches as two examples, or if you look at the credit bureau breaches that have occurred, those big databases are sold by the hackers, and then they're posted over into the dark web and then sold again and so forth. You might be appalled or amazed at how much is out there. Now, I've also included a one password video about some of this content. It's pretty funny, but I think based on our time today, I'm not going to run that. But when you have the materials, you can click through and see that one password video. So for now, passwords are and will continue to be the most important element of our internal control structures to protect sensitive data. However, because of human error, effectiveness of passwords and by extension, their organizations is questionable at best. The old rules of long and strong password, upper lowercase, special characters, numbers, all that, those are actually not the current rules. Passphrases have become more common, but better yet, password management tools have become a very effective option for creating and managing passwords because they can auto-generate a password of great length and they fill in passwords of great length. So looking forward, moving to some sort of alternative authentication measure makes a lot of sense. Passwordless, I think, will be one of those. We'll see more because this will drive single sign-on and better identity management and so on. Well, I think that brings us to our next polling question. And that polling question is, which of the following are passwordless benefits? They enable convenience, they manage at scale, they improve security, or all of the above. So as you're reflecting on that, just recognize that I believe that the days of passwords, user IDs and passwords are coming to a close. It may take a while for that to happen. But one of the reasons that passwordless is happening may be one of these answers. So what do you think? I hope you've had enough time to reflect on that because I believe the right answer is all of the above. I think they're more convenient. I think they're easier to scale to large user groups. And I think it gives us better security. All right, let's turn our attention here then next to a few other topics. I'd like to go to digital plumbing, robotic process automation, and pre-accounting as a mix of tools. Now, the first tool that I'm going to cite here is a product called Zapier. There's approximately 30 of these types of tools that serve as integrations between applications. This vendor's product works at the low end of the market. Today, though, they have about 3,000 supported applications. The synchronization is event-driven between the apps. The users can define the events, they're called Zaps, and they should result in Zapier interfacing data between the two solutions. This does support a whole lot of applications, most applications, and they can do customized multi-step workflows. There's a developer application program platform in here, so users or coders can write interfaces and then gain access to other tools. But that's not the only one in the market. Like I said, there's about 30. Zoho Flow would be another example. And it turns out that we can create flows based on event triggers in near real time. It works not only in the Zoho family, but also in other products. But not every product is supported out there. For example, QuickBooks and Xero, they're on their radar. They're going to be integrated, but not today. So again, these digital plumbing tools, connections, if you will, that connect these stacks or silos of data, also are available from Microsoft with Microsoft Power Automate. Now, this product was formerly known as Microsoft Flow. It's part of the Microsoft Power Platform, along with Power Apps and Power BI and so forth. It works in integrating a lot of common platforms, including their accounting softwares of Dynamics 365 and their CRM with Dynamics CRM. But it's not only Microsoft products. And to try to give you a flavor of that, you'll notice just by logo, you can see that Salesforce is here. You can see that Marketo is here. You can see that Twitter is here and so forth. Again, it's 400 apps that they automate. Plus, they're adding some more of the robotic process automation tools to actually put more intelligence in here. So I'm going to suggest that in most of your organizations, you're going to wind up needing somebody to be a digital plumber, if you want to think of that. Now, these three that we've cited are not all. Out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is a very interesting product called C-Data. They support about 250 applications, but most of theirs tend to be more high-end enterprise-grade products. So they have direct support for, say, Gentech and NetSuite and SAP and Oracle and QuickBooks Desktop and QuickBooks Online and so forth. I actually found them first because I wanted a little more stable interface, ODBC interface for QuickBooks. And this is way better than the one that's included in QuickBooks Enterprise along the way. Well, this vendor has enterprise, cloud, and API connectivity. For example, they can extract from almost anything and then push it over to Tableau, or they can extract from almost anything and push it over into Salesforce two-way. That's a big deal. So my rule of thumb is there's almost no accounting software out there that isn't supported directly. For those of you who might be public practice attendees, though, I'm going to call out the practice management Carbon, which is the Intuit OEM practice management as well. And another tool out of Utah called AV that have industrial quality digital plumbing integrations for public practice products. So they connect to the likes of Lissio or Smart Vault or CCH Access Tax or Pro System Tax or Lacerte or UltraTax TCS and so forth. They've really got a lot of those type of connections in there. There's some other interesting integrations for digital plumbing from Silverfin and AirPA.ai. And, you know, again, we haven't even scratched the surface with Boomi and OneSaaS and so forth. I guess, as I said earlier, maybe digital plumbing's a, you know, good topic for another day. But I can tell you with Microsoft's Power Automate, we concluded with our CPE instruction. It took about 8 hours to put all the content in there, and I'm not sure that is actually quite enough yet. Now, the second main item in this section is to talk about pre-accounting tools. There's a proliferation of pre-accounting data extraction tools. Products like the former Receipt Bank, now called Dext, which is owned by HG Capital, or HubDoc, which is now owned by Xero, or AutoEntry, which is now owned by Sage, are all examples of these data extraction tools. Now, there's some tools that claim to automate bookkeeping with artificial intelligence. I believe that Anduin and Vic.ai are clearly getting that job done, whereas others use RPA, robotic process automation, to automate routine tasks. Automation Anywhere, UiPath are very popular in as general items, but in accounting, Digilence is quite good. It can gather employee benefit plan, 401k benefit plans, data together. It can do e-file automatically and so forth. See, these pre-accounting tools assist us with routine, repetitive stuff. So if we take a tool like BotKeeper, there's a number of functions that they do as pre-accounting, data retrieval and cleanup and reconciliations, and they handle some AP and AR. And they're getting today where they can do a little bit more of the month-end adjustments, and they'll do more of KPIs and forecasts as we go. And the interface is pretty straightforward. The clients basically make secure bank connections and begin automatic statement feeds. Accounting firms basically gather the documents and set up KPIs. And then there's a little bit of exception handling and client classification that needs to occur. Other tools like VicAI basically can take raw documents, extract all the information automatically, classify it, including a pretty good attempt to get it down to the chart of account level, and then interface it into a broad number of products. And you can see popular, say, Gentact or NetSuite or QuickBooks or Bill.com or Xero are all products that they support directly. Now, the Digilence folks, on the other hand, they have what they call the Accounting Experience Platform. And Digilence bots are very, very capable here. They can do workflow queues. They can do AI document scanning. They can do workflow automation. They can do DMS work. They can do communications. There's a whole bunch of stuff inside this product. You got to think of it like an automated electronic assistant, but for the accounting profession. Well, let's turn our attention here for just a minute to mobile watch and tablet. You know, as we do this, I'm just going to maybe suggest a few things that are helpful to you. And sorry about moving my video around so much on you there, but I want you to be able to see the screen here, because my second favorite, third favorite, I don't know, because some scanners that are coming up in a minute also qualify. But one of my favorite monitor finds this year is a new portable monitor for laptops. USonic has two different models out there, the TD1655, which is a touchscreen variety. They also have a non-touch version of this. It's about $205. It's a fantastic portable monitor, USB-C connected, far better than the AOC or Asus products that maybe some of you are using today. If you've been looking for a secondary monitor for your laptop, it doesn't get much finer than this. I'm so pleased with this particular product's performance, price point, and so on. Another product that's really got my attention is the Fujitsu 800R. I think this is the best small scanner for accounting out there. It has Twain interfaces directly built in, which means it'll drop documents straight away into document management system, workflow systems, into engagement managers, and so forth. Plus, it also has the ability to read thick documents like a passport, so you can do a front, out, and back with that. It's a very, very interesting little deal. It's about $700. Over the last month or so, a little less than that actually, Fujitsu has also replaced their ScanSnap line. So I left the 1500 number in here because many of you know that, but that's now a discontinued product. There's some still left out there, but you don't want to buy them if you can get your hands on the 1600. The 1600 is about 33% faster, 40 pages a minute, better paper handling, and it's a few dollars less than the 1500 was. So about $399 street price. There is slower and lower end models, the 1400 and the 1300. But I would clearly, based on the price point differentials, clearly recommend the 1600 in this line. Well, we've gone through now the releases of all the new generation phones for the year. And I'm going to just cite a couple of three things that I want you to be aware of. In the iPhone world with the iPhone 13, hands down, I would like you selecting the iPhone 13 Pro and above, and it's mainly because of the GPUs and CPUs in there. If we go back to the iPhone 13, they were using the A14 Bionic chip. It was a 6-core type of processor. The A15, if you look at it here, you'll notice it's 2 performance cores plus 4 background cores, which is 6, plus 4 new GPUs, 10, plus 16 core neural engines. That's 26. There's 26 cores in this box compared to the 6 in the iPhone 12. If you do the iPhone 13, you get the older technology. No, spend the extra $200. I realize many of you replace your phone, you know, every year or 2 years, and you may not get as much life out. But for others of you who might buy an iPhone 13 and use it for a while, you know, maybe you have an iPhone 10 and you've been saying, is it really enough? I think on the 13, there's enough to make a difference if you buy the Pro and above. Now, Apple also pushed out their new watch series 7. You know, a slightly bigger screen and faster charging probably makes this happen, but there's all sorts of colors and bands and new healthcare monitoring apps. And it is just a reminder that Tim Cook, who's been a friend of mine well before he joined Apple, basically said about a year and a half ago, Apple is no longer a mobile or computer company, we're a healthcare company. That's pretty interesting insight to recognize from them. Well, the competitors don't sit still here. Mid-October here, Google introduced the Pixel 6, and the processor chip in here is, again, is the story. Tensor, if you don't recognize that name, is what is driving the machine learning and AI at Google, TensorFlow. And they've basically figured out how to put TensorFlow into the chip that's used in the Google Pixel 6. So both the iPhone and the Pixel 6 now have pretty heavy-duty AI machine learning hardware built into them. We'll see it now evolve in applications here shortly. In August, Samsung rolled out their latest phones, earbuds, and watch. I had recommended these to a lot of people and saw one of my associates at the CCH user conference recently. And I asked him, how's the Samsung Fold working out for you? Now, the Fold is the one that kind of opens up side by side, and the Flip looks a little more traditional. And he said, Randy, really a great product. He said, I used to use iPhones. This is so much better than an iPhone for my purposes. And it's like, cool. I'm glad to hear that. These are great products too. So all three of the vendors have updated their phone capabilities. Now, I did check before we went live on this podcast today, because Apple has imminent announcements. Maybe they'll be next week. I look for a date, but I think chip supply shortages are going to continue to be a problem at least into next year, probably even the year after that. Apple was supposed to replace their entire line. They did partial replacement in April of this year. And I know it's a little tough to see in the materials, but the trick here is the processors. You'll notice here that the large scale processor has the M1 chip, which is what is also in some of the new MacBooks. You do not want the older A13 chips or A14 chips. And you'll notice the various models have different chips in them. This guy has the A15. So you have to understand that we've got the Pros and the Airs and the iPads and the Minis, and they all use different versions of chips, and they're all in different iterations. You can see there's been 5 iPad Pros, for example, and 4 Airs and so forth. Watch the processor, the memory, and the connections carefully. You'd probably be all right on an A15 processor. You're better off on an M1, but I don't want you buying any A13 or 14 products there. Well, let's talk video, sound, and camera for just a moment. It is clear that in this new world of a lot more video meetings like we're on today, you need better quality gear. And, you know, if I pull in my microphone, you can see here, I basically have, a Blue Yeti that I've used. So sorry about scratching the mic there as I pushed it back. But, you know, you can get pretty inexpensive mics like this Marantz Pro Umpire down here. That's $49 that do a beautiful job. And I use one of these umpires, and I actually have the turret up here in my office, and I've used this Shure as well. My rule of thumb is I buy and try almost all of these products to say they really work or they don't work. That video conferencing gear is good, but this one I think is even better. The Owl Pro, it's expensive, but it's worth it. It sits in the middle of a desk. It has cameras that can go 360 degrees, and it has 8 microphones with 18-foot radius that go 360 degrees, as does the audio. Integrates with Zoom and Google and Teams and Slack and more. It is a superb meeting device if you're going to sit around a conference room table and get people's picture up on the camera for video conferencing purposes. Headphones are back. Glasses are back. Everything's better here. We've pictured the Aftershocks, bone conduction headphones, good products at $80. The noise canceling in them is superb. You can be in major conventions and flip the boom microphone, and the only thing people hear is you. And you turn it up like this and people can't hear you. It's really pretty amazing. And, you know, I think about the various products that I use. I'm using the Poly C5200, which I probably should have had in this list. And I get way better results on that $72 noise canceling headset than I do on my AirPods Pro. So you've got to think that there's lots of audio and video things coming on. But here's one more that I really like, and I'll get my picture out of the way here. You know, basically the Vuzix goggles have been a leader in this, but the Lenovo ThinkReality A3 is really a big deal. Sorry about the background call coming in there. But these are really smart glasses that are tethered to a PC, and they provide augmented reality experiences integrated in sound and in real time. So you'll notice the viewer there either can have one curved screen, a single screen, three screens, or five screens all in one experience, but it's just glasses. So these are supposed to be released here in the fall. The day they're available is the day I will order them. I've had CPA firms tell me that they've had an offer to buy a dozen for beta purposes. I have used the beta versions of these. They're very cool, and they're not projected to be very expensive. So if you compare this to the price of multiple monitors, and here in the studio, you can't see how many monitors I have sitting around me. But the fact of the matter is, if I want to get in an airplane, or if I want to work in a very limited place in a home, you can put on the glasses and you have the equivalent of five screens in front of you. It's a pretty big deal in terms of the experience. So I want you to be aware that those are soon to be, but to my knowledge, weren't here when we started the podcast today. Now, it's turning into the time of year where you might want to buy a new television equipment. 4K TVs are super cheap this season, but we're going to suggest that it might be time to buy 8K TVs. You might want to watch multiple sports events or, things at the same time. The key with 8K is it's upscaling. It'll take HD or 4K content and fill in the extra pixels, making it look like a much better picture. There are also very fine projections like the Samsung's thin wall frame that looks like fine art, but then you can use it as a viewing device. So the way we're getting our TVs will be quite different in the very near future, and we are recommending that it's time to go on to 8K. Well, in the last few minutes we have here together, I just want to mention productivity and collaboration suites. I'll go through this pretty quickly because I think this will be self-explanatory. But basically, we have web conferencing and meeting capabilities out there with products like Zoom or Teams or GoToMeeting or Google Hangouts and so forth. And we can do, and many of you have, meetings capability, including your Microsoft suite. You can do audio and video and whiteboard and desktop sharing and other capabilities. And in fact, there are about 10 features in Teams where Microsoft's trying to be the overall Uber communications tool. One of the key features is co-authoring, where you can have up to 700 collaborators in a single PowerPoint, Word, Excel, or OneNote document. You can work with your internal or external teams. You can deploy apps inside Teams. There's security controls. They're continuing to work on meetings. Zoom's still easier to use, but Teams is improving all the time on this. It does run across multiple platforms, including Linux and Mac. You can sync SharePoint. You've got multiple channels for security and productivity, and then there's some other commands in there. Now, this all comes as part of our suite offerings out there. So it turns out that Microsoft has their suite, Zoho has their suite, Google has their suite. You can see the pricing there. I am going to warn you that the March 2022 pricing will go up on Microsoft products and platforms, but fundamentally, that's where they're at today. And these various competitors each have their positioning. For small businesses, I recommend a lot of Zoho, because at its rate and you get all 50 apps, that's a wonderful small business buy. A lot of public practice professionals, because of the limitations of CCH Thompson and Intuit, they're going to use Microsoft. And other small businesses have been using Google. And really what's driven these is the cloud, a whole generation that's grown up in mobile apps, desire to lower costs, although the costs have been escalating lately. And, you know, when you look at that, it really doesn't matter which one of them you use, as long as you've got one, as I see it. From a collaboration tools perspective, you know, Chanty and Flocks and Teams and Slack, there's a bunch of them that we can use here. And the same thing is true with project management. Here again, I've looked at maybe 30-ish products here. I've linked about 20 of them together for you, but the ones that are logoed are probably the ones that I like better. So the Zoho Projects or the Teamworks or the Smartsheet or Monday.com are probably the keys there. Further, it is important that you're able to collaborate. So for those of you in public practice, think more of the items on the left-hand side of the left list. For those of you in industry, maybe more on the right-hand side, although Lissio and Teams certainly could be used by public practice and most likely would be too. Your accounting software is also likely to give this interaction. So in my mind, having tools like Lissio as a form of collaboration or one of the productivity suites, that's kind of a big deal. So which of the following are online meeting tools? Microsoft Teams, Zoom, GoToMeeting, or all of the above? And when you look at the tools that we've been talking about, you can see that there's so many that are included in the main suites. Then there's also a lot of other choices that are out there. So if you've reflected on that, Teams, Zoom, GoToMeeting, or all of the above, I hope you have concluded that all of the above are actually online meeting tools. Well, you know, what we wanted to do is just make sure that you had thought about some tips on how to take leverage and advantage of things that you already own. Just a few parting thoughts here. If you run items in a browser, each tab that you open on a browser launches all the CPU resources and all the add-ins for every tab you have open. So in today's world, we're using a lot more CPU and a lot more memory when we keep multiple tabs on a browser open. Some of these collaboration tools like Teams are very memory hungry too. So because of that, we're recommending that you be generous with your memory. Today, my recommendation of memory on laptops and desktops is 32 gig of RAM. And you might say, well, Randy, we run everything in the cloud, Citrix hosted, RDS, VMware Horizon, whatever. Yeah, you need it even for those because the local memory will help with performance, just like the graphics card locally helps with performance. Further, if you're in the suites, make sure that you pin projects to the start menu, pin your folders, pin your files while you're working on something, then unpin them. You'll find that just pinning things will save you time and you'll get in the discipline of pinning and unpinning. We recommend that you store your files in native format everywhere. And if you've got a share outside the organization, maybe, you know, share it as a PDF. But the fact of the matter is, you're way better off if you can keep everything in Microsoft 365 or your Google Workspace or your Zoho accounts and invite people in. The days of attaching files to email should be over, but we just haven't quite broken through that habit yet. We also believe that it's wise to set up e-signatures. There's lots of vendors that have this. If you're in public practice, you do have to have knowledge-based authentication e-signatures. Lissio, Adobe, DocuSign all have those type of capabilities built in. Well, today, what I hope you've learned is that there's some time-saving tools that you may already own that you might want to consider. And, you know, in future podcasts and future courses, we'll talk more about these technologies for productivity. But in the meantime, if you want to get credits for today's webinar, those you can take a short 5-question quiz. The completion certificate will come through K2. And again, we've got the materials here that you can ask for. And, you know, you were a pretty quiet group with me today, didn't ask too many questions along the way. But if you want to do, you know, the credit, the course for credit, just follow that link. We do want to hear from you. We are, you know, available on a YouTube channel, on Twitter, in Facebook, and on Instagram. And of course, we're trying to run these events every Tuesday, Friday. So hopefully it was a good use of your time today. And I hope to see you on another podcast in the not too distant future. Enjoy. Be well.